other things? I mean, high definition video. Where's the internet going? Do you think it's going to get? At the moment, it's still a bit. I don't know. You were talking about compression ratios and whether it's grainy or enjoyable to watch. Used is full screen, supposed to be DVD quality file sharing thing. Do you think it's going to get higher quality and a little bit more sit back as we go?
Believe it or not, most TV content, most terrestrial TV content, is actually distributed via the internet backbone today by BT. So it's only a matter of time before all content is distributed via the content via the internet. So as the infrastructure begins to evolve, I think that we will see more content becoming higher definition, no doubt, absolutely no doubt. I think that we will see an intelligent agent begin to sit in what we currently call TV screens today, which will be personalizable and will be connected both to a broadcast and a broadband connection. I think that we will see people being able to much more easily choose the content that they want and exclude advertising. One of the interesting things I came across recently was that given the way the internet is evolving and the amount of content currently being distributed on it for free, the advertising market, if it was going to support that free content market, would have to grow by 9 times. I can't
We'd like
see.
That.
I like that. Yeah. I can't see it happening. So I think that we're going to begin to see new models begin to evolve. IBM did an interesting study a while ago where they said that people will pay for content against the length of time it will take to download and the size of the file and therefore the quality of the file. And I think that's kind of an interesting model as we begin to move forward for video.
Never know. If you're a big fan of what was coming up, you might just pay for that. Shall we move on to another subject, ladies and gentlemen? I propose social media, which obviously is mightily popular with the public, and what with the sale of Bebo to AOL last week, that was a big piece of news. I'm throwing a question out to all of you. Is it a harder environment for advertisers, actually, to say to Procter & Gamble, you're going to put Pringles on Facebook? It's kind of easier for them to go, well, we can put a bit of TV-like material on for on demand, but actually to spread the word about Pringles on Facebook is a harder row to hoe, basically, and we're not quite sure what we're going to get.
Yeah, but there's obviously a lot more time and effort. The kind of time and effort you need to put into these environments, it goes beyond, certainly from the client involvement in that. They have to be there. It's all well and good starting up a Facebook page or, something in on Bebo or wherever it happens to be, but they then have to go back into it. They have to refresh that content. They have to keep adding to it, And it's the same with the applications that you see on Facebook as well. And so I mentioned that a lot, but some of the other sites that we all know are out there. But these things need kind of love and attention, and people do pick up. Users pick up very quickly when something has just been made by maybe the PR agency and kind of put out there and then not touched again.
Well, Matt, is that you have a product which you need to do a PR job? Is Facebook and MySpace and Bebo a bit of a gift for you?
I don't think so. They haven't really set themselves up as places where brands can promote themselves for free. I mean, I don't think any of those three would like to think of themselves as being just free promotion for my clients. Nearly all of them would rather sell the advertising that they very carefully put in place, in one way or another. Now, they all say that it's somehow different, and they'll tell you that it's different because, like Dave, they can target more, better, more interestingly, that they are more involved, that people are actually, fans of the product. They're anxious to see these things. And again, I refer to my fabulous 1997 piece of research, which says something along the lines of 90% of web users actively enjoy seeing advertisements. I lie. I'm sorry. That was 60 to 70%. But nevertheless, we are sort of back in there. The cell is always the same. The cell is always my client. Your audiences will want to see my ads, or my audience will want to see your ads, and we can target them perfectly. Actually, what I found generally is that if you buy cheap CPMs, You can get your reach and frequency really, really well, and the targeting, frankly, can, you know, is just cost. Unless you do it really, really well. When it comes to the PR side, actually, it's interesting. It's a problem for us. We don't use PR. We don't use the social media so much as a way to promote things. We use it much more as a way to find out what people are saying about our products, about our services, about us. And then we respond in the channels where we have control and they don't, which are the traditional media, where we can get that reach really easily and they're screwed. Bloggers can say what they like, where they like. There are 120,000 new blogs a day. If we open a new blog up, we're just the 120,001th, which sounds like a voice that day. Yeah. It's not, you know, the social media are a very difficult place for us to play. The traditional media and the mainstream media are actually our friends.
Uh-huh. So, but on the face of it, Dave, so you know, London is the capital of Facebook. if you emptied all the people who could be on MySpace into a field, they would be the fifth largest country in the world. On the face of it, and they spend loads of time on there, so that sounds like a gift, doesn't it? But why is it so difficult?
I don't know. I'm actually very surprised that MySpace and Facebook, being the two biggest, haven't sort of, you know, leveraged the context they have with their users. But they don't seem to have done very well at that at all. You know, they've had the Beacon disaster. I'm sure they're going to come back. And, you know, you can build a Facebook profile for what we were talking about, for free. What were you saying? Pringles or something?
Any kind of snack. But
I'm not going to be Pringles' friend. That really doesn't interest me. I
think Wendy Burger had some friends.
But the thing with social networks is, although they've been around for ages, you know, you can go back and see tribes and things like that. I don't think we really understand them yet. You know, you have a huge rush into Facebook and you go, "Way, I'm going to put everybody else on," and then they put applications in and you just go, "Oh, it's like junk mail again," and then they sort of die off and then it comes back again. It's like, it's very hard to market to, you know, in a space you don't understand, and I think it's going to take a while for us to really understand how to do that.
Go on.
There's also an element of it's harder to kind of plan media in those spaces as well and buy it, you know, in terms of the sort of time and effort. You know, you talked about before about, you know, why does so much money go into, you know, into the networks, and why does so much money get put onto that kind of standard advertising? Well, it's easy. Yeah. You know, it's easy for agencies to kind of turn that around. They can make their kind of cut on it, and off they go, and they're on to the next thing. You know, and when you get into kind of building these sort of areas, you know, there is a lot more involvement from a media agency point of view, in terms, as well as a creative agency point of view, in terms of coordinating those things. And clients aren't always prepared to pay for that time. So...
No, there's bound to be a balance, isn't there, between what the
client... I just want to add another point to that. I mean, I don't know whether we're missing a point here, because I see it as a massive opportunity for brands to really engage again. Sorry for that 90s term, the conversations from Clue Train Manifesto, because I really think right now, previously it was just a promise, now it's happening without all of us. I mean, users are directly... If you look at what's happening with Dell, they're directly having a conversation with their real customer, and they're actually using that in the product development process to improve Dell. I think if you talk about maintaining Facebook pages and profile as being a chore, it's actually slightly sad that brands don't have a communications department who can actually talk with those real users rather than have to outsource it to a PR company or outsource it to another creative agency. So I think what we're looking at is the future of services. It's actually about service design. It's not about advertising. Because if you look at the UPS widget, for example, it really creates value to show you a track where your article has actually gone to. Yeah. So I think if we step back and stop seeing how you can sell and actually create value, I keep banging on about this. I think then we start seeing some answers in this space.
So do you think, in a sense then, companies just aren't really set up for it? You know, because it's having a conversation with your customers about improving service.
I don't think they can handle the conversation.
Traditionally, you know, it was in a customer service department. You might have people on the phone. You might have people writing letters and so on. And maybe that would get into new product development because somebody said something. But they're not really set up for this sort of live conversation,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. They're not set up. And only few people, like probably some of the bloggers in the company, actually actively keep blogs and say, "Oh, these views are not views of my employer," are actually speaking the truth, because I think there's a stiff upper lip out there.
Okay.
Yeah, it certainly comes over in the smaller, you know, startups that basically run, that's all there is. There's a blog when a lot of them start, here's some software we've not quite worked out how it works. Try it, and here's a blog where you can talk about it. You know, you can see that with the Web 2.0, to use a worse bad phrase. But, you know, you can see they've totally gone for that model, but you can't see it working. I mean, Dell's pretty good. You can get a live person on the internet to talk to. Woo. But they've not really gone for that sort of honest, you know. It comes back to the... I'm sure that in there, there's a talk about the Clue Train manifesto, which was always...
It's not in here, but
you know, the whole thing with the, you know, it's a conversation, which still, 10 years later, still doesn't seem to come true. But it is. I don't think you can hide, either. I think you can see a lot of brands that, you know, that would have been able to just put stuff out there and not worry too much. You know, they're getting caught up. You can see there's a lot of activism on Facebook, and, you know, you can see people going, we don't like this. We're going to start a Facebook group. If it's got a million users, you know, brands need to listen to that. But how it does it the other way, I'm not sure. I don't think anybody's quite worked out, because I don't think they're being honest enough, you know.
But I think, just to add one point to that, I think that, you know, what marketing departments specifically and advertising in general are set up to do is command and control. You command an audience and you control the content that you send out. And what we're discussing is allowing a much more discursive and exploratory relationship with consumers. Now, I think it's not fair to say that companies are not set up to do that. I think it's perhaps the advertising and marketing departments are not set up to do that. And if you go and you dig into the R&D function of a lot of companies, they're actually very good at what we're talking about. It's just that they're not responsible for advertising and marketing.
Yeah.
And I think what we need to see is a much more progressive approach where advertising is not necessarily a cost, but is something which actually begins to benefit the business overall and begin to build its relationship with its consumers.
I think that it's... I mean, I'm as big a sort of Clue Train fanboy nonsense talker as anybody, I think. I'm right into that Clue Train stuff. However, if you've ever tried having a conversation with your audience, which for the last 6 months has actually been my great pleasure, you'd be surprised. There's a kind of, first of all, obviously there's the we want a moon on a stick and we want it for free crowd, which is that's a large portion of your audience. If you ask them what they want, they do want it. I mean, I know that obviously that there are some who, you know, have sensible demands. There are also a large number of people who have the equivalent of green ink or online tend to sort of write in capitals, and they tend to write to you more often than the same people.
Lots of exclamation marks.
Lots of punctuation generally, and yeah. You know, and they kind of channel lolcats, which is which is quite scary actually. Actually, companies are very good at having conversations with people. They have set themselves up, and this is actually something you said earlier that R&D departments are good at it, market research departments are very good at it, call centres are very good at it. The only bit of the company perhaps that isn't good at it is the bit that's in charge of advertising. Why? Because advertising is a very special skill, and it's about trying to tell people something that, you know, they didn't necessarily want to hear. Now, that's not a bad thing, but we haven't actually, any of us, addressed the role of advertising. And I think advertising has a very important role. Advertising tells me stuff, you know, that I need stuff that I didn't know that I needed. Advertising tells me stuff about stuff that I didn't really care about. Most of the brands that we work with, most of the brands who need advertising are commodity brands. They are, you know, selling sugar water, they're selling soap powder, they're selling, you know, really sort of cornflakes.
But isn't that the problem? And that's exactly my problem, that, you know...
But you actually want to have... You'd like to have fewer brands. I mean, this is actually...
I'm not talking about fewer brands. I think brands are great because brands act as signage in a completely, you know, a crowded environment. But when you have too many products which have very little differentiation...
There are 20 different kinds of Coca-Cola.
Exactly. So you have to be noisy to grab attention.
Yes.
And the problem is you don't have actually an interesting product in the first place.
You have sugar water.
Exactly. So I think we have to go back and see what is it that we're trying to sell, and if you don't really have something of value, then you kind of can find it hard, isn't
so
it?
So you want to change the way that business models properly?
I think it would be a good idea. If everything is going to be underwritten by advertising going forward, it's time we start looking at the business model.
It's got to be.
Yeah. Amen to that. Shall we move on to another channel? We've got to talk mobile with new formats, haven't we? Because it's a little baby in a cradle and it didn't do very many millions so far. But I used to work at Vodafone in the days of when Vodafone Live was... And we had 250 products in a year made and only three of them were used, I think. But anyway, I digress. I mean, is this going to take off? If so, when? And who's interested in Blick? Talk to me about Blick. This is for kids, 16, 24. You can go on, you can have talk and text for free if you don't mind getting adverts. So it's kind of ad-funded talk and text, I guess.
They have a 29% response rate. That's better than other places, so...
So I heard about a better response rate. I heard that they capped the number of people, but I don't know if that was capped. Yeah, okay. But an interesting business model. And then we have, you know, iPhone came out middle last year. And, you know, people seem to be using that, you know, with the internet in the way that you use the internet on a phone. Turning it around, widescreen, lovely. Search, works. So it was the iPhone then necessarily, you know, a watershed mark for mobile?
It's got to be. I mean, you know, people are scared. I'm quite confused how the iPhone is so much better than every phone I've ever had. You know, it's like somebody went to the future, brought back a phone, and Nokia and Sony are sitting there going, what the hell is that? You know, and they literally, you know, I've got a friend that was out in Barcelona at the mobile thing, and this Android thing, we'll see how that... You know, they say they have Android demo phones. Their keypads and screens connected to a circuit board. That's not really what I call a phone, really. But, you know, this is... you know, I work for Yahoo, so we did a bit of mobile advertising, but it has no... What we're doing there has no relevance to an iPhone, you know. It's like, how did that happen? I don't really understand. I'm still confused, and I think a lot of people, including every other handset manufacturer that is an Apple, are just in shock, going, what are we going to do?
Make one that looks like it quickly.
That seems to be the
Yes, I don't think it's as much of a problem as... I'm obviously, again, I am an Apple fanboy, and it's... except I don't have the iPhone, so I'm sorry. But I'm like a half-assed fanboy. I got a Mac Air, which I think sort of exactly. exactly. Obviously, Apple really changed the business model because they kept a share of the first year's call revenues, which is a huge difference. But Apple was in a position to negotiate like this because Apple is a very weird company. Apple doesn't want to have market domination. They've never really seemed to care about it. They only really care about the high value sort of 6% of us who are stupid enough to pay for this and stupid enough to pay for our phones. You just paid for your phone, didn't you?
I
got mine free.
Anyway.
I got mine free.
My phone is much better than yours.
We're going to get our hardware on the table.
This could get really interesting.
Leave your guns at home, boys. Does Steve Jobs actually want to, you know, it's not, none of the phones are 3G, right? So does he not really want to go 3G? Does he want to go wireless? What's the game with the iPhone, really?
I suppose what I want to know is... We did a Vodafone deal at Yahoo, and we, you know, I felt I'd gone back 10 years because we were doing GIFs, not animated GIFs though. Mm-hmm. You know, 200x40. Woo, yeah, man, this is the cutting edge of advertising. I'm sort of rubbing my head, going, "What? Wait a minute, I've gone back in time." So how does this change? How does this change? I don't think, I don't know if any of us know, but how does this change the entire market that's based on this sort of really weird WAP, weird, you know, browser I used to have, and now the entire internet, but I don't have Flash on it, but I don't think that's much of a problem these days, on my phone. That sort of completely destroys what we were doing a minute ago.
I think there's a slight difference there, though, because even if you have the entire internet on your phone, your phone has got a different affordance. I mean, the way we consume internet on the go is quite different from how we consume it in, you know, when you kind of lean back or even in your front of your desktop. So I believe, again, the advertising, whether it can be a small GIF or it's like AdMob, you know, you have words, it's all to do with the context.
No, I completely agree. I absolutely, internet advertising, mobile advertising on an iPhone should not be the same as internet advertising in general. But we do seem to have come to some kind of weird moment when it's actually changed completely, and that doesn't happen very often. You know, I can't really, you know, going from animated GIF to Flash certainly wasn't that big of a jump. You know, it was a jump. But we seem to have gone from, you know, 1993 internet to right now in one jump on mobile. And I, you know, if anybody knows what's going to happen next, come and talk to me after and we'll make millions.
Hey. Homographic advertising on the new, yes, iPhone thing. has anybody heard about proximity Bluetooth? So you could be in a football stadium or a concert venue or a film place and, you know, you get a thing that says, do you want to know what the next release is on Batman 5? And you click it and it's free and you can see the, you know, the trailer. You know, is that like, you were talking to me a bit earlier, Priya, about, you know, linking to retail and opportunity at, you know, out and about. So would that
I think there's another, I mean, since we're talking about formats and we're still driven very much by digital, by web and mobile, I think, again, there's a massive opportunity in physical, like everything from QR codes to people just going to shops and following the click-through. I mean, think about it as a physical click-through, just like a customer journey. You go into a shop, you see something, you're not ready to buy. Obviously, you go online, you do a price comparison. And I think there's a very rich journey there which isn't yet captured. And obviously, we have problems with multi-channel marketing. But if anybody kind of figures out a way of kind of daisy-chaining the physical with the online and back, I think we're going to see some very interesting developments out there.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I think that, amongst other things, you can use the... A phone is a really, really good pull device. It's a rotten. I mean, I this is an entirely personal thing. I truly hate blue casting because it. You know, I leave my Bluetooth on all the time, and I get pinged by every poster I go past. It feels like, but using it as a device to find out more, as you say, QR codes, shot codes, things like that. These are really fantastic, interesting things which take advantage of the fact that. I don't have my laptop open all the time, but I've always got my phone at the ready. My phone is always there. It begins to do really interesting things. Whether this is, in fact, advertising, I don't know, because...
It doesn't have to be just about advertising. No, Matt, I mean, QR codes are big in Japan, aren't they? So that, you know, they're zapping QR codes to find out more stuff. I think the Sun did a thing on QR codes, you know, zap the Sun code and get the new bird. I don't know what it was.
I think the mobile itself becomes very personal to you. Yeah. And I think, you know, I'll probably get shot down later on, but, you know, privacy and permission and... opt-ins and opt-outs, that I'm having trouble with at the moment, you know, this becomes really important. And how much, the location-based advertising intrudes on your experience. I think there's an amazing body of work that needs to be done there because, it's not just on your screen. Your laptop's here. Your mobile's in your pocket. It's right next to your crown jewels, as it were. But you know, it becomes quite interesting that whole work you have to do there, and I think that's something that we're going to find in the next sort of, you know, 2 or 3 years.
A couple of areas we haven't touched on mobile, certainly from where we tend to sit. I mean, there are a couple of challenges that we tend to face. First is when you were talking before about, you know, why the kind of mobile advertising? Why is it all kind of simple GIFs? Well, it's actually been quite difficult when you. But probably back me up, because of the different types of phone, getting something into a format that works on different types of phone has actually been very difficult, and certainly something that we found that we struggled with. And obviously the next thing is, I know you were kind of, people have touched on it a little bit here, but, you know, the phone is a very personal a communication channel, if you like. You know, people pay, you know, quite a lot of money for their monthly contract and obviously make the phone calls on the back of it. And, you know, delivering advertising into the kind of some of the WAP sites, again, how intrusive can you actually be without alienating the kind of the end user? So, I mean, it's been difficult, but certainly those are kind of the two areas that... That we've seen challenging clients.
Okay, thanks very much indeed, Rhys. Before we go into Q&A, I just want to do just 2 minutes on form, because you've been very quick on it, Dave. And when you said it's behavioural targeting based on ISP, you know, my earlier understanding of behavioural targeting would be I can do it on the Guardian or the Yahoo Network or Blue Lithium. But what do you mean when you say it's behavioural targeting from an ISP level?
Well, basically, we build a system that we think is you know, a gold standard. People keep saying, I'm not that fond of that thing, but it's good enough to talk about of privacy and anonymizing data. I mean, a lot of people are talking about us putting this. We put kit into the ISP that does look at where you're going, but it doesn't keep any information about what you've seen. If you ask me, you know, how did you get into a channel, a behavioural targeting channel? Let's sort of rewind a bit. There's channels within our system that say that the advertisers build or we build for them that say, you know, I'm looking for people that are interested in luxury cars or, you know, sugar water. Though quite how I do that, I'm not sure. But we build these channels and then we assign people to these channels. And all I ever know is that, you know, you're interested in luxury cars, obviously, you know, with, you know, the man you
I
are.
I have a fleet.
And that we build an entire, you know, anonymization system. We only keep things in memory. As soon as, you know, as soon as we've made a choice about them, we get rid of the... We never keep IP addresses. We never store URLs, all that sort of stuff. There's been a lot of talk in the media about it, but I think there's people haven't really understood what we're doing, and it's certainly a choice for the user. They can very easily opt out, not something they can easily do on, you know, to double click or, you know, things like that, although double click will probably come up and say, yes, you can, there is a page you can opt out.
They are wonderful sponsors today, double click.
Sorry, I'm not, you know, I love double click as well. We're not trying to, you know, annoy anybody. We're trying to, you know, help the ISPs and everybody make some money. And what I think in the long term this is going to do is take that £1 inventory, that, you know, 75p, 25p inventory, and actually give some context to it, make it useful, and actually probably, you know, cut down the amount of advertising you see, because we'll be able to give you actually what's interesting to you. I mean, you know, okay. I'm sure I'll get some questions.
Thank
on
you.
This
I'm sure. I'm sure you will. And if Sir Tim Berners-Lee were in the room, he would have some questions too. Did anybody see Tim Berners-Lee or read the stuff? Yeah, a little bit. And he said he would rather it was an opt-in service. So.